Hello and a warm welcome to another exciting episode of our podcast series, Crafting Your Writing Career, Paths and Possibilities, brought to you by the Learner Me team. I'm Mahua, your host, and today we will explore the field of learning and development, that is also known as L&D. Quoting from Association of Talent Development, ATD's website, L&D is a department or function within an organization that is responsible for empowering employees' growth and developing their knowledge, skills, and capabilities to drive better business performance. The function may be organized centrally, either independently, or sit under the human resources team. We are privileged to have with us Shalini Duggal, Director L&D Birlasoft. With a background in psychology, Shalini's extensive experience includes designing and delivering soft skills training programs, psychometrics, organization development and talent management, competency mapping, and HR consulting. She has worked with major private and public sector organizations, state governments, NGOs, and small and medium sector organizations. Shalini will help us understand what it takes to begin one's career in L&D and grow in this path. This episode will be presented in two parts. Today, we will listen to the first part of the episode. So let's dive in. Welcome, Shalini. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me on this podcast. Delighted to be part of this.
Shalini, per the theme of this podcast, my first question to you is, what type of opportunities exist in the learning and development field?
Learning and development is a vast field. One of the core aspects of L&D is really around the content that gets created, customized, and delivered. That's really at the core of it. So apart from the other skills that form part of L&D, including project management, learning facilitation, or program delivery, content creation forms a foundation of whatever else really happens in this space. And that content pertains to both classroom delivery, which could be virtual or in-person, or self-paced learning content, right? And anybody with well-developed writing skills, you know, that's where they really kind of come in terms of creating the content, doing the instructional design aspect of any kind of learning material that needs to get created. It includes everything from doing the research, putting together what needs to be delivered or communicated during the training, to writing the manuals for the people who are delivering the training, or writing the storyboards, or writing the participant manuals.
While English is typically the primary language in corporate communications, have you encountered instances in L&D where other languages are also used alongside English? Or instead of English?
Depends on what the content is getting created for. In a lot of customer service roles, or content that is created for roles which involve selling insurance, or for frontline executives who are, say, food delivery agents, etc. So for those kind of profiles, the content has to be created in the local language, and it could be Hindi or any other language, whatever part of the country that you're focusing on. So that definitely happens, and that's a big requirement. There's a lot of self-paced content that is getting created these days for people in those service roles. So that's happening definitely, yeah.
Okay, so is English a primary requirement, and are additional language skills considered helpful? For example, if someone is more familiar with Hindi and is interested in transitioning to learning and development, is there a possibility for them?
There's definitely a possibility. The opportunities might be slightly more niche or limited to certain kinds of requirements rather than being broad-based.
In the learning and development function, besides content creation, is training delivery also a part of your role?
That's not necessarily a part of a person's role in L&D, because L&D now is quite broad. If you're working in a corporate setup, then an essential part of the L&D portfolio is the learning partner role. Right, where you're not really working on any content whatsoever, whether it's content design or content delivery, but you're role is really to be the interface between the specialists within the L&D team and business. So you reach out to business, you gather the requirements, you feed it back into the system, you make sure things are aligned, happening, and then you report it back to business. There is also something like a project manager role for large projects that need to be handled. Again, that role doesn't involve any kind of content specialization, whether it's delivery or content writing or creation. So L&D now is a fairly broad umbrella and could involve various things. Say, you know, if you're looking at self-paced content, then there could be a requirement for people who are skilled in creating the graphic design, or you know, even shooting videos, or say writing scripts for those videos and getting that bit together. So there's a lot more scope than what existed, say, 10 years ago, where you know, L&D really meant classroom training. So just you're creating content, you're coming, you're delivering, and that's the end of it. But now it's a lot more than that, and you know, various ways in which content gets created and delivered.
So if you start with content creation, there are various paths you can take. You could continue in the writing domain, or you could transition into program or project management, or even training delivery. So there are different opportunities available, right?
That's right. There's also that whole piece of doing the LMS management, for example. So the ability to understand the learning management system which exists, and then kind of ensuring that you select the right LMS for your organization and get everything connected to that. So L&D is just a field that's really opened up in that sense.
When a fresher joins the L&D field, what exactly are they joining for? Are they joining to focus on writing, managing LMS, or perhaps to delve into project management? What kind of profile can they expect to have?
It really depends on what kind of opportunity is available at the moment. I recently hired somebody in my team, and that person's role is largely program management or project management, right? And they are responsible for really ensuring that the program is running seamlessly, right? In terms of doing the entire end-to-end management, in terms of making sure that the participant lists are there, the invites are going out in time, the facilitator is available for the sessions, you know, the attendance is getting marked, the reports are getting generated. If there's a marketing or a branding aspect that they are handling, and you know, all of the various aspects. Compared to this, when I started out in my career in L&D, I started out as a facilitator. So creating content and delivering sessions. Mm-hmm. And that happened to be fairly early on in my career. You know, I was just, you know, barely 1 year into, you know, the time I started working, I was, you know, 24 years old, and I had the opportunity to design and deliver content. So I think all kinds of opportunities are available. It's really what you happen to come across, what your interest levels are, what you're seeking, and you have to spot it and be there at the right time at, you know, at the right place.
What kind of pay scale can one expect in L&D, especially if they are starting off with writing as their core skill?
So I would say it depends on the kind of organization you're joining, what their entry-level salaries are. Then that can definitely vary from organization to organization, industry to industry. You know, you could join a consulting organization in the space of L&D, and depending on what you're doing there, you know, again, are you doing project management? Are you doing content creation? And there are, you know, I've come across a lot of consultants who we work with, where a lot of young people write amazing content, and especially when it's self-paced content. So they're able to do brilliant research, in-depth research, put together very well-drafted storyboards, create that into the right kind of level 3 content, for example, including a lot of gamification, a lot of interaction, engagement in a self-paced format. And there are very young people working on that. And I don't know what the salary levels for those kind of roles are, because I think that also depends on the specialization, whether you're specializing in content, whether you're specializing in the digital aspect of it, or, you know, whatever those are. But roughly, going by the current industry standards, you know, I would peg it at anything between, say, 7 to 10 that per year. It's a very rough estimate.
Okay. And when considering the upper end of the spectrum, I believe that could go up to around 60L per annum, and or maybe more than that.
Yeah, I'm sure it could go above that. Depending on the organization and you know, how well they pay. But I would say the industry benchmark would be roughly around that. It could definitely go beyond as well.
Great. So we have an overview in place for people who want to find out what L&D is all about and whether they should consider this as a career choice or not. So to delve into your career journey, you mentioned starting off as a facilitator. Could you tell us how you began with L&D? Were you always interested in joining L&D or did it just happen?
When I started my career, and it was in the year 2003, L&D or training was the more glamorous aspect of HR, right? So that's where most people aspire to get into, especially if they were getting into the space of HR. So that's something that interested me from the beginning. So I specialized in organization behavior as part of my master's in psychology. And I wanted to work in the corporate space and I was seeking the right kind of opportunity. I was doing some other work related to psychometric tool design and research before I got into L&D as a field. And I started off as a freelancer. I saw an opening, that time it used to come in the newspapers. So that's how I applied and I got an opportunity to interview and I got a project that I could be a part of. And then it grew from there. I got absorbed into the organization. I spent about 3 years with my first organization. Got tremendous exposure. So I was an employee of an organization consulting with other client organizations of that company. And I got to work with a lot of PSUs there. I got to work with a lot of telecom companies. Right at the beginning of my career, I was training people who were far senior to me in terms of age, right? Maybe not in terms of the academic background. It was a bit daunting. It was a bit, you know, challenging to face a crowd where everybody was at least 10 years or more older than you. But I found my training feet. I remember after the first session I delivered, which was with Gale, one of, you know, their setups in MP. I had traveled there for 3 days to deliver a session independently. And I felt like I'd passed an exam. I was really super excited after completing the first module. And then it was just kind of, it really grew from there. So that's how I went through my career. Then post this, I got into more corporate roles where I was training employees of the organization and not across industries or organizations. So, but I think that first exposure is what really built me up for L&D, where I got an opportunity to meet a lot of people from a lot of varied backgrounds. And that experience I really value. And I kind of pushed into the deep end of the ocean and I learned how to swim.
What are the key learnings from your journey so far?
If you're getting into the space of content, then one thing that you need to make sure is that your own content should be very strong. You should be able to see that concept from multiple aspects. And that's what prepares you for the variety of questions that may come. So you need to be at least three levels above your audience on the concept that you're taking up in a particular session. So, you know, make sure your research is up to date. As a trainer or as a facilitator, you are continuously learning and you know what's really happening in the industry, in the sector, for the people who, you know, you're training for. So that's really important and that's what helps you establish your own credibility as a L&D content person. Also, if you're working in a corporate setup, there's a lot of tenacity that you need to have to get people into attending trainings. I think that's the key challenge when you're working in an internal role. How do you get people to learn? You could offer the best in class content, but to create the willingness to take it up, that's where the core challenge lies.
So how do you deal with it? Because yes, you can create things for people, but whether they take it or not is absolutely their choice.
The idea is to create a pull, right? The push can work only so much, right? You make everything mandatory, people will do it, but there'll be no learning at the end of it. So how do you create a pull for learning? And for that, I think it's very important to address the what's in it for me or the benefit for your audience. Unless they see value and a link to what they want to do in life, that pull will not get created. And it has to be done for various people, for various programs. How do you kind of keep linking it back? So there's a whole process to it. You start with understanding the pulse of the people of your audience, you know, creating, say, a persona. What is it that they're looking for? So you create something that connects. Next to that, how do you help them see the connect and then drive it? So it's a constant everyday challenge. And I think different things work for different programs at different times.
You have discussed your learnings and challenges. Are there any additional points you would like to highlight based on specific experiences you have had with your teams?
I think as you grow senior in your role, it's very important to collaborate and to constantly keep your focus on the big picture. And the big picture is the organization strategy or the business strategy. And how are you connecting to that? So it's not what you are driving in a silo. You know, you create this beautiful content, which you think is really the need of the hour, but it doesn't really fit in anywhere. It doesn't take the organization anywhere, right? So it's very important to keep your view on what the organization's goals are, what is the organization chasing, what are the business imperatives, and to constantly look to see how you can support that. You know, how can you solution the challenges that arise from there, right? So what are the gaps that are there, the meeting of the business strategy, and how does L&D fit into that space? So how do you align yourself to that? Support that, you know, apart from the other challenges, as you move forward in your career, becomes super important.
Shalini, your point about alignment with business objectives is crucial as one grows in their career. However, when looking at team structures, especially when working with junior team members, a common challenge is that they may not always be able to grasp the bigger picture. They focus solely on completing assigned tasks and then leaving for the day. How do you align them with the business objectives and ensure they understand the big picture?
There are multiple ways in which one has to constantly drive this. A very basic one is, you know, when you're doing the goal setting at the beginning of the year, right? And it's the goals really flow top down, and you know, helping people see the connect. So whatever KRAs you are helping the team establish, how does that link up to your own KRAs, the functional KRAs, the organization KRAs? So what is the upward connect there? That has to be very firmly established. So why are people doing a certain thing? If there's a program that they're working on, if that's the part of their KRA, then you know, how does it really add up in the larger scheme of things? I think the other thing that needs to be done is that one also as a team manager needs to understand what are the aspirations of each of the people who you're working with, and how do you link up what they want in their personal capacity for themselves in their careers and in their personal space to what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. So it's important to keep having that conversation at a regular frequency during the year to see how are things going, what are the aspirations, and making sure that you are aligning people with the right opportunities to help them meet their aspirations. And that's the only way that connect can really be built up, right? So making sure that the communication is always on, right, in terms of understanding the individual aspirations and then kind of linking it up into the larger goals.
Are there any experiences or influences from childhood days that you believe have helped shape the person you are today?
As a child, I used to read a lot, all kinds of books. And typically during my summer vacation, I could be found sitting in a corner with a book. That's what I used to do. I think that's something that's really helped me in the field of L&D where I am. Because I think if you're more attuned to reading, you're more attuned to getting into the depth of things, the details of things. There's also, it's said that one of the ways to build empathy is to read a lot, right? And to read a lot of literature, to read about other people's lives from their perspective. And that's what I think books kind of help you do. So I think that's something that I got primed for, you know, through all of this reading that I did in my childhood. And that helps. So it my education in psychology added to that. Since I'm in the space of behavioral training, that's something that comes in extremely handy.
As someone who has direct reports and also reports to someone else, you have a unique perspective on communication. What have you learned about the kind of communication you should have with your seniors, the communication you would like to have with your team members, and the communication they can have with you? Can you share any experiences or insights from being in this position?
Being in the middle position gives you a perspective on both sides. You could be privy to certain information which you have to then filter and pass on appropriately so that sensitivities are maintained. That's a skill that comes in handy. How do you apply the appropriate filters both ways? So, you know, you could be privy to a lot of information which is coming through the grapevine, which you learn from your team. And how do you filter it and pass it on appropriately upward so that, you know, the right kind of decisions can be taken, for example. So I think that's something which is important. How do you mediate that bit? Other than that, the generational changes. Typically, people who've joined the workforce post my generation have a different line of thought. They have a different approach towards work, towards authority. So their line of thought is different. And with each generation, that changes. It's important to be mindful of that. I remember in one of my previous organizations, there was this entire training that the leadership felt had to be done for the young people joining the workforce because they didn't know how to behave. But I think it's really about training the managers to be sensitive to, the needs are different, the approach is different, but the commitment could still be the same. So maybe your style of managing has to now change because the people who are coming in with a different line of thought. So I think that's important to be mindful of who you're dealing with, what are some of the common trends, what are some of the individual needs, and then kind of both upwards and downwards, because you could be of a generation which doesn't fit in either of those two buckets. So how do you manage that?
That's a great point. Managing different generations in the workplace can be challenging. So how do you handle interactions with, say, someone fresh out of college, somebody at your level, or people who are senior or older than you? What changes do you make in your communication to interact with these different groups, different age groups?
The key really is to have an open mind, not to be rigid in terms of what is right and what is wrong, what is the correct way to say something, or because that's where the gap comes or the challenge comes. So if one is closed in their line of thought and thinks that, because I did this when I was that age, other people have to also behave in that manner. And that's where the problems start to come in. So how do you remain open to the idea that people will behave differently from how you are? There is no right or wrong way of going about something as long as the outcome is met in the required manner. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's important to define that outcome and to define what needs to be achieved instead of what needs to be done to achieve that. So it's not about the how, but it's really about the outcome that people need to arrive at. And then let people find their own way of doing it. So as a manager, I would remain open to other people's approaches towards achieving the outcome that needs to be done. And at the same time, remaining supportive to their needs. They could still be experimenting. They could still be trying out different things to achieve that. They could have their questions on how to go about certain things. So making sure that I'm there to support them for those kind of questions or for any other kind of support required for a person who comes at a manager level, but remaining open to how they want to say things or, what their thought process is and vice versa, right? So in the sense that even upwards, making sure that I understand what is the requirement, what is it that I have to do, and making sure that I align with my superior. What is it that they are trying to achieve and how can I best support that without getting into whose way is right? I think that's where the main gap comes.
Yes, it is important to align your efforts with the business objectives your reporting manager is aiming to achieve. So rather than being fixated on a particular way of doing things, focus on how your contributions can support those objectives. What do you do outside of work? If you get time, that is.
Yeah, so I think that's a good disclaimer to use because normally there is no time. Between work and family, it leaves very little time for oneself. So I have a young daughter and most of my weekends are with her, running from one extracurricular class to the other. And whatever downtime I get, I don't do so much. I try and build in an exercise routine. I try and build in at least 20 to 30 minutes of morning exercise. I try and meditate when I can. And I think those are the things that you pick up as you grow older. Those are your sort of go-to things when you want to de-stress. Otherwise, it's just maybe watching some series on Netflix, or if I do get the time, then maybe picking up a book. That's what I do.
You mentioned that you have a young daughter, and if it is okay, I would like to delve a little deeper into your personal life.
Sure.
Based on my coaching experience with many women, I have noticed that women have to handle various responsibilities as their family grows. So initially, or rather before marriage, life is different. There aren't too many responsibilities, but after marriage, you have to make adjustments. And especially when children enter the picture, there are further changes to accommodate. So did you face any difficulty when taking on these additional responsibilities at home and at work?
When my daughter was born, I took a small break, a fairly small break, about 3-4 months. The legislation was still for 3 months of a maternity break, so I had to join back after 3 months. My office was very far from my house, so it was about 35 kilometers. And driving up and down every day was a challenge. You know, I used to end up spending a lot of time doing that. It wasn't that job wasn't working for me anymore, which is why I decided to quit. And I took a few months off. Luckily, post that, I got an opportunity to work part-time. So, you know, I used to work 3 days a week. And I was very fortunate that I was offered that opportunity. The opportunity was tremendous. It was in no way compromised in terms of my seniority, in terms of the quality of work I did. So I could do a lot of interesting work, a lot of work that added value to me, and I feel also added value to the organization. And I did that for about 2 years. I continued in that kind of a format. And post which I joined that same organization full-time as an employee. That's the kind of change I made once I had my daughter. I think life was kind to give me that kind of a setup, which worked for me.
So Shalini, that's very interesting to hear about the opportunities you have had. So I would like to address our listeners, especially women who may be feeling frustrated about having to take a career break. So with remote and part-time job options available in many organizations today, women can stay intellectually engaged and not feel completely left out in terms of their career. So these opportunities can help them stay occupied and continue their professional growth.
Definitely.
Are there any specific books that have been helpful to you? And would you recommend them for different situations or reasons?
Books depend on one's area of interest. I've read all kinds of fiction. But now I'm moving gradually towards books that are around spirituality or about self-help or around history, more factual things, what has occurred, you know, in the world, or autobiography. So that's something that has started to interest me more now. Reading is a good habit. It also helps you switch off. It also, you know, kind of calms your mind down. For some people, it helps them fall asleep. So there's no such book that I would recommend. I would recommend reading as an activity.
What are some of your favorite books?
One of my favorite authors is Gabriel Marquez. I've read most of his books. I go with authors that I've liked in the past. There's also Murakami, who I read a lot. Those are some of the authors I typically go back to.
Are there any other resources such as podcasts, videos, or articles that you prefer to consume for specific reasons?
It depends on the area that you're researching. So Psychology Today is one of the websites that's really good. They have a lot of quality content. I read a lot from their website, especially on topics related to psychology or behavioral training. Apart from that, positivepsychology.com, that's a really good resource. I'm on their mailing list. I get a mail from them every couple of days. Very useful resources.
Okay, great. So, Shalini, we will end the first part of the episode here. In the next part, we will delve deeper into the skills required in the L&D field and the desired skills one can look at to grow in this field. What an insightful conversation, Shalini. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you.
As we wrap up today's episode, I sincerely hope that you have found this conversation both valuable and enlightening. Your feedback and comments are greatly appreciated, so please feel free to share your thoughts. If you have enjoyed this discussion, don't forget to hit the like button and do share it with your friends, colleagues, or anyone you believe could benefit from our conversation. Moreover, consider subscribing to our channel to receive notifications of upcoming discussions as soon as they are released. Your subscription ensures that you won't miss out on our future content. Thank you once again for tuning in. Wishing you a wonderful day ahead.